perspective. Okay. I've been blessed in my life to get to go to an event called the College World Series 50 times, seriously. So it's this event where the top 8 college baseball teams come and they play double elimination tournament to be the national champion, all right? And when I was in college, my tickets, I just happened to be really good friends with a lady who worked for the director of the College World Series, and Jack's tickets were the best, like literally the best, right? And so several times I got to sit in the third row right behind home plate. And this is before luxury boxes. So like you were really close and cramped. And what made it really awesome is in the fourth row and fifth row right behind me was where the other coaches sat. They were reserved for the other coaches who were not playing to scout the other teams. And so you're super close, and I'm sitting there, and I love baseball. And I feel like I know a lot about baseball. Like, I was a pitcher and a catcher. I know how to call game. Strategy is kind of my thing. I get it. I love the intricacies of baseball. And so I'm sitting there, and the most – I don't know if you guys follow college baseball. I know it's not a big sport, but it's, you know, Augie Garrido and Rod Dedeau and Mike Martin. I mean, some of these most legendary coaches to ever coach college baseball are right behind me. And they're talking. I mean, you know, they sit in pairs with an assistant or with a scout, you know, that they have. And they're clocking pitches and they're charting every single pitch that the opponent is throwing. And I'm just like, oh, I can't wait to hear this. And I quickly realized, I don't have a clue what they're saying. For someone who thinks he knows a lot about baseball, I'd see a hard slider come in and they'd call it something else. I'd see a hard slider come in with a slightly different angle and they'd use yet a different term. And I'm like, oh, and they have different zones for every pitch, like wherever it landed. I mean, if I know like there's, you know, 5-6 pitches that are pretty standard, they probably had like 30 different kinds of pitches. I just had no idea on, and my mind was blown. And I just remember sitting there being so fascinated and so frustrated because I thought I knew baseball. And I guess I did. I'm grateful. This is always on ESPN. And if YouTube was a big deal back then, which was a while ago, I would be famous because I'd be like, I was just thinking about this, like I'd look so confused, I'd have this confused look on my face as I'm like cheering baseball, but I'm like listening to them, and people would have quite the heyday with me, I'm sure. But here's what's up. Would you ever hear a baseball announcer today, a Joe Buck, talk about, you know, I can't even remember any of the examples, but you know, made up pitch names. Could you ever imagine him broadcasting that over TV? It's like, of course not. The reason is because he would have to know who his target audience was, right? His perspective would be based on people like us who think we know a lot, but we really don't. Like, he'd be talking to us as we were watching a game versus the people behind me, the coaches, they weren't talking to me at all, were they? They were talking to each other. If they were talking to me, they would have used much more common language. That's just the reality. See, what we're talking about today, when we get into values, when we get just keep going with our vision, is our perspective needs to not just be focused on what we know here as church, but truly, if our perspective, when we think about the vision for this church, really has to think outside of here. The healthiest churches in the world are not obsessed with themselves. The healthiest churches in the world are constantly looking outside, constantly wondering, how can I bring the love of Christ to someone who doesn't know Christ? And that's what we have to think about as we walk through vision. It's kind of about us, but it's really about us to be about others. And so we're gonna hit this today, and we've talked so far, and I want to give one more sports analogy. I want to talk about a football field. I should have brought something to write with. That would have been perfect. But if you could picture a football field, right, rectangle. So far, we've talked about our purpose statement, which is we encounter God. This is our goal. This is what we want to do. And it stems from something big. Jesus gave us the Great Commission, right? Go make disciples. Baptize them, teach them to obey. Go make disciples. And so, well, he's the one who saves people, so how do we make disciples? And we're saying, look, the goal is we just want people to encounter God. If they encounter God and we're alongside with them, we can walk them through like what that means and let them know what Christ has done for them. And so the end zone, so if you have a football field here, the end zone, the goal that we're after is to encounter God. We want it for ourselves, but we really want it for other people. We want it for each other, and we want it for those outside. That's our up and out triangle, right? But our goal is we want to encounter God, because every time you have an encounter with God, they're shifting, they're shaking, there's oftentimes breaking and rebuilding, and it's good. Sometimes it hurts a little bit, it's good, right? And so our goal, the end zone, where we're going, is we want encounters with God. Now the game plan itself, how do we get into the end zone? Because the ball just doesn't move there easily, especially if you're my team, Bill. How do you get there? Well, that's our discipleship plan. That's our vision. That's what we talked about last week, which was up, in, and out, which is kind of a triangle to think about. And it's my relationships. I want to focus on my relationship with God. That's my up. I want to focus on my relationship with in. That's iron sharpens iron. When we meet together, when we do things together, it's healthy, right? Whether it's small, whether it's a one-on-one, whether it's a small group, whether it's a mid-sized group, it's healthy and it's good. And then the out, and out is my relationship with those outside Christianity or even outside the church. And I just want to be transparent with who I am, who Christ has made me to be. And so the game plan to have encounters with God is to honestly walk in faithfulness to what it looks like to live a healthy up in and out life. But we're going to get to values today, and this is really the last piece of everything. And values serve as the out of bounds, okay, the sidelines. So in the game of football, I realize I see the Dahlians here. I want to do a soccer analogy. I don't know enough about soccer, but this one wouldn't work because you can run out of bounds in soccer and come right back in and no harm, no foul, right? But in football, you can't. In football, if you take the ball out of bounds, like even just like that much on the line, play's dead, regroup, start over. I mean, that's how it works, right? You have to like put the ball back on the hash marks and all right, let's do another play. It's like out of bounds means stop, there's a boundary and we can't cross that boundary no matter what. So the values for our church serve as that. They serve as our boundaries. They serve as, they guide us in making decisions. So for instance, if we have this golden opportunity that just, I mean, our eyes just pop, our heart starts beating, we're like, oh, this could mean so much for our church if we would pull the trigger on this, and it looks absolutely incredible, like an opportunity we've never had before, but it contradicts just one of our values, we don't do it. And that sounds really easy right now, but when that opportunity does present, we're going to come back and say, well, our values, and we have five values that we're really holding up and saying, these are our sidelines. We're going to stay within this, like this field here, and this is how we're going to get to the end zone. And this is, we're going to see encounters with God. These values serve as a curve, serve as a guideline that we won't cross. This is how strong, these aren't just five token words that make us feel good. These are actual words that we will live within. And so there's five of these values, and I'm really thankful the board really did the work on this and came up with these. But they are engagement, expectancy, truth, honor, generosity. Went through these a couple of weeks ago. And we're going to, basically this week, we're going to talk about engagement, and then we're just going to walk through the other four in the coming weeks as well. But and honestly, I really think these will be taught on, whether it's messages, whether it's small groups, no matter what it is, regularly, because these values are, these are our guiding principles. So engagement. Can I do one more sports example? Is that okay? This just cracked me up a week ago today. And it stands for everything I'm not for, by the way, but I still laughed at it. And I'm still laughing at it. The Buffalo Bills are really bad. Really bad. At halftime, the game was going so bad that one of their Pro Bowl cornerback quit. I mean, retired from the whole game. He retired at halftime. And I want to know what that locker room was like at halftime when coaches, you know, okay, we got to engage. We got to, like, focus in and make these shifts and these changes. And the guys, Levante Davis, is like, I'm going to go shower. I'm done. I just can't imagine what the rest of the team was feeling. And the coaches are like, well, you know, you're not even going to finish the season. You're not even going to finish the game. Like, this is like quitting right in the middle of the battle. Like, this is terrible. That is not engagement, okay? So there's your negative example of engagement is not just like, well, I think I'm out. Engagement's actually quite the opposite. And so I want to look at Merriam-Webster is going to help us here, the definition of engage. All right, here's the definition. Straight out of the dictionary. It says to offer something such as one's life or word. That's big right there. To offer something such as my life or my word as backing to a cause or aim. So as backing, so in our context, our cause is to make disciples, right? Our aim, our goal is to get to the end zone, which is to encounter God. So for me to engage means to offer something. Maybe it's my life, maybe it's my word, as backing to encounter God, to bring others to encounter God. The next part of that is to expose to risk for the attainment or support of some end. Again, that goal, to expose to risk. And I mean, seriously, we look where we live. We live in the States. This is, there are church shootings, but this is a relatively safe place, right? To have public church, so our doors are not locked. Anybody can walk in. It's come and go. And so I really do think that exposed to risk in our context is pretty minimalized. Like, I don't think we really take that all that seriously in general when we talk about our faith. But engagement means at least being willing, right? It means having a mind, having a perspective that says I'm willing to expose myself to risk. I'm willing to expose myself to risk to believe in this end, to believe in this cause, to believe in sharing the love of Jesus with others. That's engagement. It's not walking out at halftime, but it's like jumping all the way in, recognizing I might take a hit on this. And so that's what engagement is. It's not casual. It's not, we should go to church this weekend. You know, it's not just this like kind of, oh, you know, it's a dedication. If you're going to expose yourself to risk over something, you better believe in that, right? I mean, to like be sold out for it. So I was thinking about this, and if engagement, if the value engagement, if we were to write a book, a little book, really little book, on engagement, it would have two chapters, okay? The first chapter would be called My Benefit. My Benefit, which is like all the reasons why it'd be a really good idea for me to engage in my local church. This is just, by engaging in your church, just think about it. I don't even know which angle to play first, but by engaging in your local church, you automatically find people who have the same values, people who carry same priorities, people who, you know, might even be willing to risk something of themselves for your sake, right? So there's benefit in that we can actually meet people of the same values. We can develop deep friendships. We can develop growth in that and actually do life together and really mature in that area, which is just incredible. Relationships are huge. If you engage in your church, you know, hopefully that's growing in, right, of the triangle, the up in out triangle. Up is, I really hope by engaging in the church you're growing closer to God. If you're not, we're doing it wrong. but it's like being in his presence, having an encounter with him, growing in the word. When the Bible's open and we study it and we want to apply what that means to our lives, when we have something, we're saying, look, I want to have a healthy prayer life. I want to have a happy word, like life in the word. And these things make us stronger, right? So as we engage, we actually grow in that. When I engage in the church, I actually have a much greater platform for going outside then. I have a confidence. I have a certainty of the identity God's given me that I can be transparent out, right? Outside the walls of the church and be true to who God's called me to be. I think in the church, every church would say every church stands for truth. Every single Christian church, even though different churches contradict each other. It's the source of truth, which is different in churches. In this church, we've said, look, the word of God is our source for truth. And so if you're engaged in this church, we want to take truth as defined by God, not just what we want to believe is true, but what he says is true. Accountability. If you engage in the local church, there's accountability. That's healthy. It's good. We don't like being called out, you know. So it's not. I don't mean it in a negative way, but there's accountability in that. I want to live up to my friend's expectation. That's not necessarily unhealthy. I don't want to let you down, you know? You don't want to let each other down. That's just part of it. There's accountability, and it comes back to that relationship. So engaging in the church, you know, there's Sunday school, there's Bible studies, there's all kinds of reasons, right, to engage. Chapter one of this book would be called My Benefit. And it's big. But I'm really not interested in talking about that one today, because I think you know everything there is to know about that one. It's the second chapter of this two-chapter book, and it would be called Someone Else's Benefit. And I honestly believe that when we engage in the church, we can do so in such a way that other people benefit tremendously by what we do. So engagement isn't just about me. Remember the perspective of the baseball coaches? If they're just in it for themselves, they're just in it for themselves, and I didn't understand a word. But if they were going to start talking to me, they would change it. They would actually change their perspective so I could be a part of that conversation, right? So when it comes to this, someone else's benefit, would you open your Bibles to 1 Corinthians 9? While you do that, in the beginning of the Bible, in the beginning of the Old Testament, God called Abram, called him out of the land of Ur of the Chaldeans. He was at least culturally, he was a moon worshiper. You know, you think about the song Father Abraham, you're like, well, his roots are really something, and God encountered him, right? Completely saved him. And then build a nation, built us out of that, which is pretty fascinating. Spiritual nation, right? But in the very first verses of chapter 12, I can't remember if we good. I couldn't remember if we had a slide or not for this. This is awesome. I want you to think about like what God was saying to Abram for his benefit, but for someone else's benefit. He was calling him into something. So it says, now the Lord said to Abram, go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I'll show you. And I'll make of you a great nation, and I will bless you, and I will make your name great so that you will be a blessing. There is so much in it for Abram himself. It's the father of nations, right? And it's all about him, and I'm going to make you a great nation. You'll be blessed, and did you catch that last bit? And you'll be a blessing. What does that mean? So the next part of this, verse 3 is, I will bless, this is God speaking to Abraham. He says, I will bless those who bless you, and him who dishonors you, I will curse. And in you, all the families of the earth shall be blessed. The whole call of Abram, in fact, the whole call of Israel throughout the Old Testament, it wasn't just about Israel. Today, it's still not just about Israel. It's about, well, and it's how we define Israel today as well, but it's so much bigger than that. God chose a man to build a nation, not just that one nation could get saved and have salvation. He did it so this nation would be a light to the nations, to the Gentiles, to the pagans, right? He called this group from this one man, Abram, and this family would grow, become a nation, that they would be a light to others. God was going to bless them so that they could be blessed, their benefit, and then he was going to bless them so they could be someone else's benefit as well. And in fact, when he says, and in you, all the families of the earth shall be blessed, there's no limitations on the gift that Israel is to be to all the nations of the world. That's incredible, right? It's not just about them. And yet, like, I mean, you see it in the Old Testament. Because it's not just like finger pointing them. We're kind of this way too. It's like, seriously, life just happens and you get busy and you get threatened. You're exposed to risk. And what do? You bunker in and you're like, look, we got to just take care of home right now. We've got borders to raise. We've got, this is dangerous living right here. And that's the Old Testament. And they won wars, they lost wars, and very rarely did they actually go and bless the other nations. Because every time they'd get close, they'd worship their gods. They'd get fascinated with their things. And in the New Testament, it's really not any different, is it? Like Jesus is, in the Gospels, as he's walking and he's interacting, and it's just like you, Israel, it's like when you think of the leadership, the Jewish leadership at that time, so off course, and it's like they were so locked in on chapter one of engagement. They were so locked in on my benefit, how to stay pure, how to walk in the law, how to like do this and not cross this line, and it was so, and there's holiness in that. It's not all wrong. That's why it's so deceiving, right? There's good in it. But what they didn't do was chapter two. They forgot this part, even though they memorized the Torah. They forgot this, that in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. Not by just seeing you thrive, but actually by you loving them, by you encouraging them, by you being a light and pointing them to God. And then when that light of Christ came, when Jesus walked on earth, they failed to recognize him. Today, the church, we are Israel. We've been grafted in. This is Romans, right? We've been grafted into Israel. We are spiritual Israel here. It's a Jewish party, but we're invited. This is amazing. And it's like, look, we're really good at the my benefit, chapter one. We got families, we got kids, we got to get saved, all these things, and yet there's a chapter two on this that's never changed since the beginning of the call. At the very beginning, when God called Abram out of this land and said, I'm going to build for you a nation, and you're going to be be blessed and you're going to be a blessing, and all the families of earth shall be blessed because of you. And so this is 1 Corinthians 9, and this is New Testament church now. Paul, this is kind of a long speech, but I want to highlight starting at verse 19. And Paul is writing to the church in Corinth, and he says, this is actually, I think, his second letter to Corinth. There was one before this. We just don't have it. But he says, "For though I am free from all, I've made myself a servant to all, that I might win more of them." Just that alone. When Paul talks about being freed, he is. One, he's a Roman citizen. You could take this in the natural, right? Paul's a Roman citizen. That means they really don't have a lot of power over him as long as he just obeys the government. But he's talking about something so much greater. This is Paul who walked in the highest form of what he deemed just the purity of religion, being a good Jew. And he got set free from his sin, and he recognized that he was never going to set himself free, but Jesus would set him free. He had one encounter with Jesus that just changed everything. It's one of the most dramatic salvation stories I've ever heard. It's Paul's. And he's like, "Look, I'm free. I am free from all, but I'll become a servant that I might win more of them. If I'm going to meet with a slave, I can relate to you. I can come down to you. I can get this." Okay? In the next verse, he says, "To the Jews, I became as a Jew in order to win the Jews." Well, Paul's a Jew. That makes it easier, but he doesn't identify himself as that as much as he does someone who's set free. He knows Jesus, so he's been set free. But for the Jews, he's like, "Look, I can relate to you. I'm to be a blessing to you as well. And I will..." You wanna do Jewish culture stuff? Yeah, let's do some Jewish culture stuff while I tell you about Jesus. He says, "To those under the law, I became as one under the law, though not being myself under the law, that I might win those under the law." So he's talking about, like, with the Jews who are so certain that, you know, just like Paul was, where I have to live this life and it's gonna look like this. And I'm so angry at anyone who's not doing it right, like this. And he's, you know, he's found the law, and he's, you know, all the additional man-made laws that come to help you live out the real law, and he's trying to live it. And well, he got set free from that, but he said, "Look, if there's a Jew who's living under the law, I know how to enter that world. I can enter that. I can sit there. I can come and I can meet with that person, that I might save one." Paul would expose himself. He would engage. He would go all in that he might save one, right? Verse 21, "To those outside the law, I became as one outside the law, not being outside the law of God, but under the law of Christ, that I might win those outside the law." He's saying, "Look, if there's people who don't even care what the Jewish law is, guess what? I know how to relate to you too. I'm going to come and I'm going to sit with you. We don't have to talk about the Jewish law. I know other stuff. Let's talk." What does he do? Is it in Athens? Is that where Mars Hill is, right? Where he goes and he's like, "Hey, this altar to the unknown God," right? That's, he just worked with what he had. He didn't compromise his values. He didn't compromise his faith. He didn't enter into temptation and sin, right? He actually walked into it and brought the light of Christ into these situations. It's different. If you walk into a situation that's a sin situation and you're going to be tempted by it, that's different than what Paul was doing. That's different. Paul was so opposed to living under the law. He had done it. He'd gotten set free. He didn't want to go back to it. But he could relate to the people in that. And to those who were pagans, right? And everybody in this time worshiped something. This wasn't just like a simple agnostic or, you know, who you know, I'm not going to do anything that's going to threaten you. No, I mean, these guys are like, they'll have idols set up in their homes. They'll have, Paul's opposed to that, right? So, anyway, verse 22, he says, to the weak, I became weak that I might win the weak. That word weak, what if you switch it out? We can't do that in Scripture, but it's kind of Paul's point here. What if the word weak was sick? What if the word weak was arrogant? What if the word weak... Paul's saying, look, where somebody is, I want to meet them there. I don't want to compromise who I am. I just want them to see Christ in me. I want to be a blessing to all the families in the earth. He says, I do it all for the sake of the gospel, that I may share with them in its blessings. Well, Paul's story is pretty clear that he exposed himself to risk, right? He actually, in the end, he did. He gave his life. For a long time, he gave his word, but eventually he gave his life to the cause. He knew Christ, and knowing Christ made him realize, like, his greatest prize was in heaven. It was never going to be here on earth. And he gave everything he had. That's engaging. And I know what it's like to bunker, to dig in, build a trench. When we moved here, like we've not been here a year yet, and it's like, I'm telling you, for Andrew and me, the most important thing was getting our kids confident. Like, this is, you know, we're gonna call this home. We're all in, but man, have we bunkered in because we want to be stable for our kids. Well, that's good. Yeah, but we also got to get out too. Like it's actually healthy. The thing is, if we bunker for the next 3 years here, we're missing out on a whole lot of opportunity to be a blessing to others, and to be blessed by others. That's a reality, right? But it's I think it's really natural, though, for parents who love their kids, you know, or for someone who loves their church to say, look, we got to be focused on ourselves. We got a long season coming where we really need to grow healthy. And I've been in this before. I've actually witnessed this multiple times firsthand, and it never works for a church. Whenever a church says, we just need to get healthy ourselves, and then we're going to really work on evangelizing. It never works. Satan always brings just enough so that you're never healthy enough to feel confident, right? That's just a reality. It's like part of getting healthy, part of being healthy is up in and out. It's actually caring about someone else's benefit as well, like from the get-go. It's not the bunker mentality, which is so natural. Like it's so natural. So my question, and I want to ask this each of these weeks, how we end, is how do I live this value at St. Paul Westport? How do I live the value of engagement at St. Paul Westport? And, well, three things. One, jump in. This church is incredible. I've told Paul Teske this several times. Like, the people who are here are here. I mean, there's a lot less lukewarm faith here than what I'm used to. I love it. So in some ways, I guess I am preaching to the choir here. But just to say it anyway, it's to jump in fully, engage. There is chapter one, which is very valid, which is called My Benefit, of this book we just pretended to write on engagement. It's my benefit. We all have a benefit for engaging, for jumping in fully. The second one, though, is to carry the perspective that chapter two is actually better than chapter one. That Father Abraham is probably really happy right now. He's with Jesus, right? And he's got all his sons and grandsons there. But I have to imagine it's even greater for him when he sees Africans and Asians and Europeans South Americans. He didn't even know about them. North Americans, he didn't know about them. like when he sees Australians, like when he sees them coming into the throne room, and he's like, this came from me. Like, this came from my calling. Like, there's so much joy. And if we would keep our perspective of joy based on someone else, someone else's benefit, that's one of the greatest ways to engage in the local church, is to constantly think about someone else. And that leads me to the last one. And initially, I thought the whole message would be on this, and that we'll get there eventually. But it's the way we serve. It's Jill, I'm assuming you set up the communion today. Is that right? Altar Guild. It's not the glorious, like, everybody's going to be so excited with the way it's set up. Like, I don't know that anybody is. We take it for granted, don't we? We're thankful. But what happens if Jill, what happens if her perspective is not like, I got to get to church early this Sunday, okay. Yeah, which I'm sure didn't happen. as Dennis left. No, I mean like, I got to do that. It's my week. The drag, which is totally reasonable and understandable, right? But what if it's I want to bless others to encounter God? What if it's all about that? What if I'm engaging in such a way that I want others to encounter God? What if every role, what if tech, eventually we're going to need somebody behind a soundboard, because that's just good practice, you know? And it's like, I got to serve soundboard today. Actually, no, what if it's like, I get to help others engage in worship. And it takes on a whole new meaning. It's not just putting in my time, getting the job done. It's no. And it's the same, you know, I get to greet people today. I'm praying somebody new comes in, and I want to give them love, and I want to, like, make them feel so well. I want them to encounter God, and I'm going to engage for their benefit. It's like the Sunday school teachers, the 9 o'clock Sunday school teachers. Look, I used to teach fifth grade Sunday school between college and seminaries. I had a couple of years, and I had 12 fifth graders all to myself, which was wild. And I loved it. You know why? Not because I wore a badge that said I taught Sunday school. I loved these kids, and I loved seeing them grow in faith. It's like I want to benefit them. That's why I serve. And so I want us in the coming months, I want to maybe flip some things serving wise, and we all, as engaged people, we all ought to be serving with the whole idea that it's for someone else's benefit. And there are all kinds of roles. We need more on the Altar Guild. We need more in the tech stations. We have roles that I haven't even talked to you about, security team, but we need a security team. Not that carries guns around, though, whatever. But people that just walk around the building. We have children at 9 o'clock downstairs, at 10 o'clock downstairs. I think we should have a few people just assigned to walking the premises. It's deterrent, right? It's just common. Like, and it's not logging my doing my week because I'm up. It's actually, I want the children, I want the parents to engage fully, knowing that we're out here, we're watching things. Like, it's that mind shift. So how to engage in the local church? That chapter 2 is actually more important than chapter 1. It's going back to what Abraham was called as, to be a blessing to the nations. It's to be a blessing to others. He enjoyed his blessing, and should have. And we should enjoy ours. But we also want to do it for someone else. God, I pray today that we would, by your power, by your love, grow in faith, grow in confidence in you. Lord, that our engagement is really not about ourselves. It's that extra blessing. It's kind of like worship really isn't about us. It's all about you, and yet when we worship you, we feel really good. It's because we've just met with you. We've just had a meeting with the Creator. There's still something in it for us. And Lord, would you even stir in our hearts now? God, I just see this as an individual thing, just that each of us would really feel a calling, a leading to a particular place to serve, to a particular role, to a way that we just feel called, like, so that we can be a blessing to others. God, we thank you. We thank you for this church. We thank you for your favor over St. Paul. This is incredible. God, grow us in love, grow us in heart. In Jesus' name, amen.